Welcome to Life-Giving Water Messages. This is a supplement to the special episode entitled Jesus for Atheists, which was a discussion between myself, Reverend Todd Laddick, and Reverend Sal Sermarco, regarding Richard Dawkins's column, Atheists for Jesus. Prior to recording that episode, I had read Atheists for Jesus in his 2017 compilation book or anthology book called Science and the Soul. And having read that, I was inspired to write a response to Atheists for Jesus, which then inspired also the podcast between myself and Reverend Sal. And so this is the response that I wrote to Richard Dawkins's Atheists for Jesus. In a column entitled, quote, Atheists for Jesus, end quote, Richard Dawkins lays out something that might catch the reader by surprise. The title alone begs the question, is Richard Dawkins really advocating for Jesus Christ as a role model? Of course, anyone who is familiar with Dawkins knows he would not be promoting Jesus Christ, Son of God, Lord and Savior of the world. Rather, he would be promoting Jesus of Nazareth, the first century carpenter turned rabbi who taught love, peace, and goodwill before being executed as a traitor by the Romans. The article's title draws the reader familiar with Dawkins's previous work right in, and in some ways it delivers an effective plea from a self-avowed atheist for promoting Jesus's teachings so long as his, quote, genuinely original and radical ethics, end quote, are separated, quote, from the supernatural nonsense that he inevitably espoused as a man of his time, end quote. Yet while this all sounds rather warm and fuzzy, from an otherwise not so warm and fuzzy anti-theist, what we end up having is more proof that when it comes to philosophy, let alone theology, Dawkins is simply inept and out of his league. In this essay, what I will attempt to do is to summarize Dawkins's main argument. Then I will attempt to show why, despite how it may seem on the surface, what Dawkins is arguing for is nothing more than what he would otherwise call, quote, nonsense, end quote. In doing so, I will hopefully establish a fact. Jesus cannot be separated from his theology. What's more, theology cannot be separated from Jesus. This is something that, while it seems to escape Dawkins, I pray will become very clear to the readers of this essay. Part 1, the summary. Since Dawkins is facetious in his writing, I will not hold back from being so here. However, I do hope that even in my facetiousness, I am accurately conveying his main points. Below is my best attempt to do so. If you would like to read the brief column for yourself, I will refer you to the book that it can be found in, Science in the Soul. In his column, Atheists for Jesus, Richard Dawkins goes Julia Child's on us by putting together a recipe, also known as an argument, for why atheists should be for Jesus. Let me read you the footnote for this. It should be noted that Dawkins, and people who feel compelled to write his sort of drivel, should not be confused with the ordinary, run-of-the-mill atheist. An atheist is someone who has faith that there is no God, and so they suspend any belief in such a God and live life under the assumption that no God exists. I use the term faith intentionally, because even the most brilliant atheist, Dawkins included, will admit that they cannot disprove God. They will bring up the incredible odds against such a God existing. Where they actually pull those odds from is another issue. They bring up evidence they believe supports their thesis that no God exists. However, they do not have proof. Thus, their thesis remains nothing more than a theory at best. Yet, they believe in it with undying fervor. This, of course, amounts to faith. But Dawkins is not an ordinary atheist, but a different breed of atheist. He is what has been coined an anti-theist. This is an atheist who sets out to oppose belief in God and those who hold that belief, with the intent of winning converts to atheism. Do you see the irony there? Anti-theism is the religious leg of atheism. Every good recipe has ingredients, and Dawkins has three. The first ingredient is, as Dawkins puts it, quote, "the apparently oxymoronic title," end quote. That ingredient gets qualified with a dash of sugar. Jesus was a really nice guy. Uncharacteristically nice. And, quote, "rebelled against Yahweh's vengeful nastiness," end quote. This is then followed up by a dash of salt. As nice as Jesus was, he was born in a time where people were prone to be morons. In fact, according to Dawkins, they were not just prone, but had absolutely no choice. Belief in a God is moronic, and, again, according to Dawkins, all people believed in God in Jesus' time. Dawkins' second ingredient to this burnt turkey dinner is, according to him, a bit of a paradox to Darwinism. You see, Darwinism believes in natural selection, which has been described as, quote, a deeply nasty process, end quote, that fosters, quote, "selfishness at the expense of public good, violence, callous indifference to suffering, short-term greed at the expense of long-term foresight," end quote. So you might ask, where is the paradox? Well, if humans have evolved in a naturally selective world where the fittest survive, then one would think that humans would merely think of themselves and their own survival. However, we all know that within humanity is the capacity to be kind, generous, helpful, compassionate, nice, the sort of people to whom we say, quote, "she is a real saint," or "he is a true good Samaritan," end quote. This paradox, the human ability to display super niceness, is a perversion of Darwinism. According to Dawkins, while it may be a paradoxical perversion of Darwinism, it is sorely needed in this world. This leads our great chef to introduce us to his third ingredient. Though super niceness, from the standpoint of natural selection, is, quote, "plain dumb," it is the kind of dumb that should be encouraged, end quote. This third ingredient is the entire point of Dawkins's article. Thus, the third ingredient is as follows. Super smart atheists should be spreading super niceness throughout humankind. But Dawkins asks, is there a model we can pull from where plain stupidity gets spread throughout humanity? His answer, quote, "yes, by God, religion. Religious beliefs are irrational. Religious beliefs are dumb and dumber, super dumb. Religion drives otherwise sensible people into celibate monasteries or crashing into New York skyscrapers. Religion motivates people to whip their own backs, to set fire to themselves or their daughters, to denounce their own grandmothers as witches, or, in less extreme cases, simply to stand or kneel week after week through ceremonies of stupefying boredom. If people can be infected with such self-harming stupidity, infecting them with niceness should be a doddle," end quote. Dawkins then postulates that the best way to spread super niceness is to follow the model of religion, or at least borrow a religious figure in order to do so. So who better to accomplish this great humanitarian feat than Jesus of Nazareth? Footnote. Sadly, Dawkins ends his column with a somewhat sort of disclaimer that Jesus may not have existed. On page 280, in the afterword, he writes, quote, "There is a minority school of thought among historians that he didn't. They have a lot going for them," end quote. I will not waste space here in listing the, quote, super dumb, end quote, to use a favorite word of Dawkins's, reasons that caused Dawkins to believe those super minority of historians that have an itch that Jesus was a mythological figure as opposed to historical. It is clear that Dawkins would, at the very least, like to lean toward the minority on this and believe that Jesus was just a myth, despite the overwhelming historical evidence that Jesus was indeed a historical figure. Again, do you see the irony? It seems that Dawkins isn't as evidence-based as he'd like us to think. In fact, one could accuse him of being rather irrational. Thus, Dawkins muses on creating t-shirts with the slogan, quote, "Atheists for Jesus." And he even entertains a rebirth or, quote, return, end quote, he uses both wordings, of Jesus, where Jesus' modesty would compel him to turn his t-shirt around to read, quote, "Jesus for Atheists," end quote. Part 2. The Nonsensical Dawkins. So there you have it. That is Chef Dawkins' recipe in a nutshell. A. Jesus was super nice. B. Despite natural selection compelling humans to be First Order / Galactic Empire nasty on both individual and human levels, humans have been an anomaly in regard to natural selection. We've actually displayed selfless super niceness. Also, you can think of Jesus, Gandhi, etc. We've displayed selfless super niceness when, per natural selection, we ought not to. And C, super smart atheists in super nice benevolence should spread super niceness by duping super dumb people into modeling super niceness off of a potentially mythological dude who was both super nice and, ultimately, super dumb. What's more, the best way to do this, or at least one of the ways, is to create t-shirts with the super catchy slogan, quote, "Atheists for Jesus," end quote. I probably have to go no further to show just how silly, nonsensical, and super dumb Dawkins' argument is here. Don't get me wrong, I agree with him on some points. Yes, humanity is a paradox to natural selection and the way the natural world seems to operate. Yes, people should aspire to be like Jesus. I can't argue with him there either. However, his argument, ingredient by ingredient, begs the question. It begs multiple questions, actually. Therefore, logically speaking, it is fallacious at best. Let me point out why. First, for Dawkins to claim that Jesus and people of his time did not have the choice to not believe in God is utter nonsensical rubbish. Seriously, has Dawkins read the Bible, aside from the parts he likes to pick on? If so, has he not read the following in the Psalms? "The fool says in his heart, there is no God," Psalm chapter 14, verse 1, and also found in chapter 53, verse 1. That verse was written 1,000 years before Christ. Let me ask this. If people didn't have the choice to suspend belief in God, why is it that the psalmist is acknowledging that fools do not believe in God? This acknowledgement implies that such, quote, "foolish," end quote, people did exist in the time period of the psalmist. That means that 1,000 years before Christ, there were atheists in existence. does it not then seem both misinformed and irrational for Richard Dawkins to claim that Jesus had no choice but to believe in God and the supernatural? This just exposes the sort of sloppy research, if it can be called research, that Dawkins does in preparation for his smackdown of religion. He also forgets that not only was atheism an option in Jesus' time, so was polytheism. In fact, the Jews and Israelites were both notorious for turning away from Yahweh toward other gods. The Pharisees arose as a group to address the need to, quote, separate, end quote, themselves from the Hellenistic culture, in which Greek or Gentile gods came as a part of the package. Dawkins proves to not only be a horrible philosopher, as well as an even more horrible theologian, but also a terrible historian. In footnote 9, I explain that Dawkins seems to believe that there is merit to Jesus not even being a historical figure. This school of historical thought has pretty much been debunked by overwhelming evidence that not only corroborates Jesus' existence, but the existence of other characters in the New Testament as well. Paul, for instance, we know existed. Dawkins even alludes to as much. And Paul corroborated the existence of Peter, James, John, and the other apostles, whom he named as eyewitnesses who were preaching and teaching about their resurrected Rabbi Jesus. There's archaeological evidence proving the existence of Pontius Pilate, of Herod Antipas, of Caiaphas, the high priest, etc. Not to mention the fact that Jesus, as well as his family and followers, are all referenced by extra-biblical sources such as Flavius Josephus, writing only 50 to 60 years after Christ died, Tacitus, and others. Dawkins seems to think that the decades it took for people to write down, quote, Jesus' words, end quote, lends credence to the theory that Jesus might not have existed. However, that would be like us coming to the conclusion that John Lennon didn't exist because we discovered a book written about him decades later. The logic doesn't follow. It also exposes the fact that Dawkins has no real understanding of the oral tradition that existed in that time period. In fact, he's seemingly ignorant of it. I will not belabor this essay with any more evidence. However, needless to say, that for Dawkins to even entertain these pseudo-historical ideas as plausible flies in the face of a ton of evidence. For someone who rejects God due to the, quote, lack of evidence, end quote, this is just sad. It's rather irrational for someone who faults religion for being irrational. With that said, Dawkins chooses Jesus as his role model, even if he is merely a myth, because of a conversation he had with a former Christian who still goes to church because he finds the myth to be powerful. But why bother? If Jesus wasn't real, why would one use Jesus to promote some sort of secular anti-theist morality? Why utilize a theological figure to promote a non-theological ethic? His logic here certainly begs the question. So what if mythological Jesus was a super nice guy? Why not use a real person who was super nice and go from there? And if Jesus was super nice but super dumb, why in the primordial soup would we ever want to model ourselves off of him? This leads to another question, this time regarding Chef Dawkins' second ingredient. If we are wired to be selfish, to be cruel, to seek to dominate in order to survive, and to kill rather than be killed as per natural selection, then why do humans tend to do otherwise? Why do we set up silly, super dumb moral codes and ethics that keep us from surviving the way we are naturally wired to? What sets humans apart from nature? And what makes humanity such a paradox? Dawkins even acknowledges that super niceness is just plain dumb when one considers natural selection. It goes against everything we and the world around us are wired to do. So if it is utter stupidity to go against nature and be super nice, why should we be promoting super niceness? Why is this a value that Dawkins seems to hold? What, in other words, is driving him to desire what he ultimately admits is utter stupidity? Then we get into Dawkins's diatribe about religion, which we all knew was coming, right? Dawkins's drivel about religion seriously lacks the kind of deep thought one would expect of such a brainy philosopher or theologian. But as was stated at the outset of this essay, Dawkins is neither of those, no matter how much he aspires to be. It does not take one long to pick apart his anti-religion arguments. Sure, religions can be exactly as Dawkins describes them at their extremes. They can cause people to do pretty stupid things. However, how sure is Dawkins that religion itself is stupid? Based on what evidence is he forming his assessment? Note, I am not asking what, quote, conjecture, end quote, he is basing his assessment on. Rather, on what evidence? The evidence he uses to come to the conclusion, quote, there is no God, end quote, is the same evidence that others, some scientists included, come to the conclusion that, quote, God exists, end quote. Evidence gets interpreted. We are subjective by nature, and we tend to see truth in the evidence based on what our foundational assumptions are. Thus, if I believe God exists, I will see the evidence in a way that convinces me that God exists, and vice versa. What's more, are religions the only institutions and belief sets that cause people to act stupid? Seriously? How stupid is it for someone to try to convince super dumb people that they are super dumb and should take the word of super smart people such as Dawkins? How stupid is it to waste one's breath on convincing the super dumb who are too dumb to really comprehend what you are arguing? One might argue that Dawkins realizes this and he is writing to bolster the beliefs of the super smart, who already have shed themselves of their need for stupidity. But what sense does that make? They already believe as Dawkins does, so why bother? But I digress. Again, are religions the only institutions and belief sets that cause people to act stupid? What about secular, atheistic governments, such as the regimes under Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, Kim Jong-un, etc.? What about Hollywood and their stupefyingly boring award shows, and the droves of people who sit glued to the TV set to watch Hollywood stars who do not even care that they exist? What about people putting their trust in their leaders, handing more and more power and money over to them in order to feel safe? The greatest dictators in the world got to power through the obedience and acquiescence of, quote, stupid people, end quote. What about people who put their faith in doctors who believe the current, quote, scientific advancement, end quote, to be the best way to approach whatever illness they are trying to cure, only for those same doctors to change their opinions in a few years? How many people have undergone treatments only to find out that those treatments were unsuccessful? Surely, based on medical science's sketchy success rate, it is stupid to believe that today's scientific advancements are sufficient to cure us from cancers and other illnesses that plague us, and yet many people do put their faith and hope in medical science. And what of the stupidity of thinking one knows better than others? What of the arrogance and stupidity to think that the ancient world was super dumb, while we in the modern age are somehow smarter than they were? What of the statement that, quote, religions are irrational? Is that itself a rational statement? What makes the belief in God irrational, for example, not logical or reasonable? What makes the belief that this entire universe and all within it just randomly, perchance, blasted into existence with no intelligent cause behind it, so rational? The odds of that happening are just as bad, if not worse, than God existing. Part 3. Jesus and Theology. So far, I have summarized Richard Dawkins' argument, which is clearly exposed as illogical and irrational on its own merits. It is the same vitriolic drivel we've heard from Dawkins before, but this time it's masked with a, quote, "Hey, let's respectfully honor Jesus all the while pushing my vitriolic drivel," end quote, kind of nonsense. For what it's worth, it does seem like Richard Dawkins has grown from the garbage he postulated in The God Delusion. After all, he now seems to have listened to other theologians out there and has come to the conclusion that not all religious figures fit into his ad hominem attacks against God and religions. Good for him. With that said, he is now shifting to do something I would like to show cannot be done. He is looking to take Jesus and divorce him from Christ. In fact, Dawkins feels that by doing so, he is doing Jesus a favor. He writes, and I quote, "I think we owe Jesus the honor of separating his genuinely original and radical ethics from the supernatural nonsense that he inevitably espoused as a man of his time. And perhaps the oxymoronic impact of, quote, atheists for Jesus, end quote, might be just what is needed to kickstart the meme of super niceness in a post-Christian society. If we play our cards right, we could lead society away from the nether regions of its Darwinian origins to the kinder and more compassionate uplands of post-singularity enlightenment. I think a reborn Jesus would wear the t-shirt. It has become a commonplace that, were he to return today, he would be appalled at what is being done in his name by Christians ranging from the Catholic Church with its vast and ostentatious wealth to fundamentalist religious right with its stated doctrine explicitly contradicting Jesus that, quote, God wants you to be rich, end quote. Less obviously, but still plausibly, in light of modern scientific knowledge, I think he would see through supernaturalist obscurantism," end quote. Would Jesus, upon returning, find some of what Christians have done or are doing in his name to be troubling? Absolutely. That is why Jesus warned his disciples and through them warns us, quote, "You too must keep watch. For you don't know when the master of the household will return, in the evening, at midnight, before dawn, or at daybreak. Don't let him find you sleeping when he arrives without warning. I say to you what I say to everyone, watch for him." Mark chapter 13, verses 35 through 37. Yes, Dr. Dawkins, you are right there. However, don't get so comfortable in your armchair. Jesus would also be appalled at what you are suggesting as well, and what's more, he would be aghast if he were to come back and find all the world following your lead on this. It would be as if, someday down the road, you were to return from the dead to find out that people were suddenly worshiping you as the God of naturalism. You would be horrified to know that people perverted your teachings, your beliefs, and your work in such ways. What Dawkins is doing is nothing short of stupefying. Jesus cannot be divorced from who he said he is. One either believes it and follows his teachings, or one doesn't and can just toss him and his teachings aside. Everything Jesus taught, this is important, so listen up. Everything Jesus taught was based on his belief in God and on his understanding of his divine relationship with God. In fact, Jesus not only saw God as his Father, but he saw himself as the divine expression of God in the flesh. After all, was it not Jesus who questioned his disciples in such a manner? Quote, "Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I speak are not my own, but my Father who lives in me does his work through me," end quote. John chapter 14, verse 10. Dawkins seems to believe that with his inconclusive scientific understanding of reality, that Jesus would somehow stop believing in a superstitious God and start believing in naturalism. But that begs the question, again, would he? What's more, if he did, would he even bother to teach what he surely would come to discover, as the great Richard Dawkins knows, is plain stupidity? How presumptuous of Dawkins here. Indeed, how arrogant. No, Dr. Dawkins. One cannot take a historical figure, for I will not go against the hard evidence that Jesus exists to even entertain pseudo-historical schools of thought. One cannot take a historical figure and divorce them from what they believed and or taught. Jesus was not teaching ethics. Let me state that again. Jesus was not an ethics professor or philosopher. Jesus was teaching theology. Every one of his ethical codes comes from his understanding of what he called the greatest commandments. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 40. All of the teachings Dawkins would like to borrow from Jesus cannot properly be understood outside of God. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, apart from God, that one would turn the other cheek when being attacked. It makes absolutely no sense, apart from God, that one would do good to those who seek to harm him or her. It makes no sense, apart from God, that one would carry their cross and follow Jesus at all. Jesus cannot be divorced from theology. The only reason these teachings make sense is because of Jesus' view of what Dawkins has labeled, quote, the vindictive Ayatollah-like God of Abraham and Isaac, end quote. In fact, Jesus was not rebelling against the nasty Old Testament God, but saw the Old Testament God as a God of love and grace. Sure, people wrote that God punished these people for this and ordered those people to kill for that. Yes, that stuff is in the Bible and is, at least some of it, horrifying. Most of it, though, understood in the proper context, is not horrifying. That God would want what is best for us and would, quote, punish, end quote, us is in order to correct us from being wicked, hurtful people, is not horrifying. What parent doesn't punish their children? Even if the punishment is a time out, it is still a punishment that is intended to teach and correct. What's more, it doesn't take a Darwinian evolutionary biologist, Dawkins' actual field of expertise, to realize that not everyone will follow what is right, and that the failure to do what's right often leads to destruction for the wicked person and many others around him or her. Whether God is involved in that, quote, destruction, end quote, or not, it is the natural consequence to perpetrating evil. But beyond God's wrath, there is profound grace. God does not just abandon people, but saves and redeems them. The entire Old Testament is flooded with God's call for justice, mercy, and humility. The Old Testament is littered with God's call for people to return to him. And there's a footnote here. God is neither male nor female, but transcends both. Still, it is easier to use pronouns, and so I'm opting to use the traditional pronoun of Jesus' day. So, back to what I was saying, the Old Testament is littered with God's call for people to return to him. And for every judgment verse, there are multiple verses on God's loving kindness, tender mercy, and abiding grace. Dawkins quite conveniently skips over all of those verses to pull out the, quote, horrifying ones, end quote, in order to build up a straw man for him to burn down. Anyone with any sort of logical sensibility can see that plainly. So Jesus was promoting the God of the Old Testament, and saw himself in divine relationship with that God. He cannot be divorced from that God any more than he can be divorced from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the latter who, I am presuming in ignorance, Dawkins left out. What's more, if the Bible is as unreliable and utterly stupid as Dawkins would like us to believe, and if its authors simply made stuff up for the sake of promoting their agenda for power, a concept that also flies in the face of historical reality when one considers that the apostles were put to death and the earliest Christians were worshiping in secret and often persecuted, then why bother pulling any of its ideas out for use? Why take utterly stupid nonsense, divorce it from the supernatural, and follow it to our own peril in a naturally selective world? Footnote. One final note. Dawkins wants to take the teachings of Jesus in order to spread super niceness to people in the same way that religion has, supposedly, spread stupidity, hatred, bigotry, and self-harm. But wait, slow down, Doc. Didn't the Christian religion at least, no matter how far you may think it has fallen, set out to spread the teachings of Jesus' super niceness? Isn't that why the gospel and epistle writers wrote of Jesus' super nice teachings? Even Paul, again in that Bible Dawkins probably has not fully read, instructs his readers to follow the second greatest commandment of love your neighbor as yourself. This obviously didn't just come from the Torah, but from the lips of Christ. If, according to Dawkins' own viewpoint, the Christian religion has fallen in the attempt of spreading super niceness, what makes him think that he and other anti-theists will succeed? Where is the logic or the rationality in that? But again, I digress. Let me say this emphatically. Jesus cannot be divorced from theology. Theology cannot be divorced from Jesus. Either Jesus was who he claimed to be, or he wasn't. Either he was the divine expression and embodiment of God, fully human and fully divine, or he was a raving lunatic, a madman making claims that got him and those who followed him killed. There is one other option as well, that Jesus was just some sort of zealot, as Reza Aslan postulates, who got himself killed and wound up a mythological figure made up by deceptive people such as Paul. This may fly in the face of the historical reality that people like Paul had nothing to gain and everything to lose for their subversive message against Rome, but if that reality is to be taken seriously, Jesus still cannot be. Part 4. Conclusion. What Richard Dawkins is proposing is utter nonsense. It is devoid of even the most basic theological sense, it is self-contradicting, and it insults the intelligence of many people, religious and non-religious alike. That anyone, and I mean anyone, takes Richard Dawkins seriously is a sad affair. If he would simply stick to his field of expertise, there would be much wisdom, I am sure, for people to pull from. With that said, he is well out of his league when it comes to theology and/or philosophy. One has to wonder, if Dawkins is so confident that God does not exist, why does he spend so much time talking about him? He would be better off just ignoring God altogether and teaching us his findings of the natural world. We'd be better off if he did that as well. As a theist and a Christian, I believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. I believe in Jesus Christ as the only begotten Son of God, who was both fully human and fully God. If there is one thing that I do agree with, in regard to Dawkins's delusional take on Jesus, if he were to return, he just might pick up a t-shirt that says, Jesus for Atheists. He wouldn't do this because he is for their theological position. Rather, he would do this because he loves them too and is calling them into a relationship with him, the one who created them. Jesus Christ died on the cross so that all, including atheists, could be redeemed if they would only turn to him. As such, I could certainly be down with a Jesus for Atheists campaign.